Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our outstanding producer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, on the board. It is Thursday, November 7th, 2023, 6 past the hour of 1 o'clock. Welcome back to Hour 2 of the big program. Glad to have you along. How about that, Mr. Zommers? We've got some recombobulation in already.
You got to love getting Dan Schaefer's opinion on there, because as you said, great reporter, great writer. I'm subscribed to the recombobulation area.
As am I.
Accidentally with two emails.
You're a double dipper.
Not, I don't. Psst, sorry, Dan, I don't pay for it.
But just subscribe. That helps, you know, that helps. Everything helps, right?
This is true.
One of the great things I like, and I've never had, obviously the first time on the show, and hopefully not the last. Hopefully he enjoyed himself. But he's knowledgeable. B, he's a great writer. And Mr. Zommers knows I love great writing. And number three, he's just easy to talk to. He's a great conversationalist.
And if you follow him on Twitter at Dan R. Schaefer, or sorry, on X.
Twix.
You can tell he cares about Milwaukee and Wisconsin, and he's always posting. He'll keep you abreast of the situation.
Oh, very good. Keep you abreast and apprised of the situation. If you haven't checked it out, in all seriousness, go check out the recombobulation area. Follow him on social as well. And if you fly through General Mitchell Field in Milwaukee and you're by the recombobulation area, take a picture of yourself, tag him, and likely he'll repost it. So there you go. Appreciate Dan Schaefer making time for us. And we're going to continue to follow this story today. Again, it appears that OC Eric Coveney of Laguna Beach, California, is coming back to Wisconsin to run against Tammy Baldwin for the United States Senate. And before we go any further, let me just say this, because I know there'd be some Yahoo that says, well, you know, Tammy Baldwin has a house out in wherever it is, Maryland or D.C., basically. The difference is Tammy Baldwin also, and for, you know, was born and raised in Madison, was a state legislator, an assembly person, then became a United States congressperson, has had longstanding roots here, and has maintained her legal voting and home in Wisconsin, in Madison, still has a home here. And it is not unusual for United States senators to also get a property in the D.C. area, because they're there so often, and now with the dysfunction of Congress, it makes it very difficult to travel back and forth all the time.
Yeah, it turns out when you work in D.C., being able to stay in D.C. if you have to is helpful.
Yeah, and back in the day when my former boss, Scott Klug, was in Congress, it kind of became in vogue for Congress people, not so much U.S. senators, but for Congress people to sleep on their couches in their office. And I believe, I'll stay corrected, but I believe the House passed resolutions saying you really can't do that anymore.
Aw, why not?
I don't know. It is not unusual for a member of Congress to have, you know, a place to stay, because, you know, if you're not doing that, the taxpayers are paying for hotel rooms, you know, to stay out there. So it's six of one, half dozen of another. But Tammy Baldwin is a born and bred Wisconsinite. She has maintained a residence here, and this is where she has voted all of her life as well. Also a big difference, as Dan Schaefer pointed out in State Journal Sentinel reporting, that Mr. Hovde has missed half of the last 30 elections. He hasn't even voted in California. I think it's tough to say that you value Wisconsin. I mean, I guess if the guy wanted to come back and live here for 3-4 years and then run, that'd be one thing.
But they're just shipping him in for an election.
Yeah, exactly. Or if he sells his property in Laguna Beach and moves to Wisconsin. But you're absolutely, that's a good way to put it, Mr. Zommers. They're shipping him in, the Republican Party is, just to run for U.S. Senate. And also, I completely agree with Dan Schaefer. David A. Clark, former sheriff of Milwaukee, all hat, no cattle. He could win that race, even by being outspent 10-20 to 1. because he is completely far right whack job. And the base, the MAGA base, the Republican Party could go for that. So we shall see. We'll continue to follow that. We've been promising it for what, 2-3 days now, Mr. Sommers? But at 11 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock, once again, it is time for What's Worse. This or that.
The choice is yours. You can get with this, or you can get with that. You can get with this, or you can get with that. You can get with this, or you can get with that.
Once again, it is time for What's Worse. No prize money involved. You don't win anything except your chance to call in and be on statewide radio across the state of Wisconsin, over the air, and around the world on the Civic Media app as we weigh in on the important questions of the day. Well, at least from a lighter side. Not sure if you saw this, Mr. Sommers, but the Rolling Stones, are back on tour.
Makes sense. They just dropped their new album.
Yes. Do you know who one of their key sponsors is?
I do, but I'll play along. Who is it, Todd? I don't know.
One of the main sponsor of the Rolling Stones tour is the AARP. The do they deserve that? I guess. I mean, the Associated, they do great work.
Oh, I know. It's just interesting to look on these absolute rock stars and be like, "Yep, that's the old people insurance one."
Now, careful! I'm getting those mailings now. He looks at me like, "Yep, you do." And Alex, before we ask the question, explain to folks what a digital avatar is.
Well, a digital avatar, that would be, especially since we're talking about concerts, usually it's a projection or a hologram or even just a little animated character of somebody.
All right.
So it'll be like, if you remember when Mark Zuckerberg announced the change from Facebook to Meta.
Yes.
And then did all these digital tours of places, and he had a little animated digital avatar of himself walking around being like, "Wow, look at all the poor people."
It was goofy.
It was really goofy. But anyway, that's what a digital avatar is.
Thank you. See, this is why we have young people on staff. It's fantastic, because I could not have done that. Kiss, the great rock band Kiss, they just wrapped up their, final world tour. You know, the guys that had the black and white face paint and the one guy has like a 9-inch tongue or something
Gene
like that.
Gene Simmons, yeah.
I don't know.
People have compared my tongue to his.
Really?
For those of you on the radio, you didn't see that, but I just flashed my long tongue at Todd.
That's the most excitement I've had all day. But anyway, very good. Very good. Wow. Maybe you be a fill-in for Gene Simmons.
Please, no.
All right, so Kiss just wrapped up their final world tour, or so they say. I believe it was Madison Square Garden. Don't quote me on that. I had to give you all that background. Here is today's question. Call in. Tell us. What's worse, that the Rolling Stones tour is sponsored by the AARP, or that Kiss will now live on as a digital avatar? 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. What's worse, that the Rolling Stones tour is now sponsored by the AARP, the Rolling Stones tour is sponsored by the AARP, or that Kiss will live on as a digital avatar? 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You could also text us on the Civic Media app as well. What's worse, that the Rolling Stones tour is sponsored by the AARP, or that Kiss will now live on as a digital avatar? 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Let's go across the pond to London, to the UK. Jay in London, what say you? What's worse?
Are we allowed to go off topic with what's worse?
Sure, whatever you want to do, Jay.
Mike Johnson is no motive, okay?
Okay.
It's not Moses. I know Moses. I was there when Moses was in Egypt. No?
Jay is talking about the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, comparing himself to Moses over the weekend or over the week here.
He did that? Oh, my
yes.
gosh.
Yes, compared himself to Moses.
Uh-huh. Aaron, you see that?
Holy Moses, as they say. So, Jay, what do you think is worse here? The Rolling Stones tour is sponsored by the AARP, or that Kiss will live on as a digital avatar?
I think I would take the Rolling Stone, but I'm offended a little bit by you saying Aaron is part of the Kiss. No.
I didn't say he was part of the Kiss. I'm just saying, based apparently on his tongue, he could fill in for Gene Simmons. In a pinch. Well, you know, they have these tribute bands, you know. Now there's like tribute bands where it's not the actual artist, but it's people that are like them. So I'm not sure. I mean, Zomers plays an instrument. Do you sing, Mr. Zomers? I don't even know.
No, not really.
Well, but you could be like Milli Vanilli. Just, you know, mouth it.
And also, I think Gene Simmons plays bass, if I recall. I could do that.
You can play bass. All right, Jay.
I saw him saying that. He kind of lodged his long tongue, something like that, at you.
Yes, he was. Yeah, yes, we'll just leave it at that. Yes.
Okay.
All right, Jay. Thanks. All I appreciate right. it. Always appreciate the call. So, Gene, Jay is taking the Rolling Stones being worse than it's sponsored by the AARP than Kiss living on in a digital avatar.
Personally, yeah. I'm a little bit torn, but I think the digital avatar is worse.
Is worse.
Just because it's kind of cringe-inducing. Like, right. Remember watching the Mark Zuckerberg stuff?
Yeah.
That just made me, it felt bad.
It feels weird. So what do you think is worse, that the Rolling Stones tour is sponsored by the AARP, or that Kiss, the band Kiss, will live on as a digital avatar? 844-967-2789.
And like you mentioned, AARP does good work.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they do.
The fact that they're sponsoring it, you know, they just know their audience, and that's okay.
Yes. Had a couple of people try to call in. I'm not sure if we've tried, and it hangs up. But we'll keep calling in. We'll take more calls after the break. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. What's worse, the Rolling Stones tour sponsored by the AARP, or Kiss living on as a digital avatar? Back after this on Civic Media. Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 20 past the hour of 1 o'clock. At the bottom of the hour, we have Keegan Kelly from Cracked.com coming back on the show and talking to us this time about the culture warriors. Have they overrun comedy? And this is something that's, comedy's changed, right? I mean, it's always been, comedy's based on kind of making fun of people, right, or things. But now some comedians have really gone one way or the other on the political comedy and have gone to this kind of culture warriorism in comedy, and has kind of changed the way that comedy is being done. So we will talk to Keegan Kelly from Cracked.com at the bottom of the hour and ask him about that. Right now we're asking you, in what's worse, that the Rolling Stones tour is sponsored by the AARP, or that the band Kiss will live on as a digital avatar? 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Tom from McFarland, the beautiful town of McFarland. Tom, thanks for listening and calling in. What's worse?
I definitely would say that the Kiss is much worse. The AARP just makes me feel old because, I guess I'm now in an age where AARP is there. But, Kiss with an avatar, that is just blasphemy.
It's goofy, isn't it?
A trend. I'm noticing that there is a... I'm sorry?
Just kind of goofy, I think.
It is. you know, there's another company that got into, they're getting into some trouble, but they downloaded or digitized all of Jimmy Stewart's movies.
I saw that.
And now they're offering bedtime stories for Jimmy Stewart. And it's like, oh my gosh, that's just terrible.
Yeah, I actually saw that yesterday. I'm trying to think what program it was on, and they played some of this, and to me, it really didn't even sound like Jimmy Stewart, and really that much, but it just, it sounded like a weird version of him. And it's like, can't we just live in the moment and appreciate that life doesn't last forever and we have to be present in the present? To me, this whole avatar stuff and digitization and then AI means, well, don't worry about it. People don't actually die. We'll just recreate them. And I think it prevents us from living in the moment. What do you think?
I would completely agree. You know, there's a reason why I like classic movies. It's because they're classic from a different period.
Right.
I don't need to have them recreated for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate for what it was and not try to recreate it. It's just, ugh.
Yeah. I appreciate that, Tom. And also, I totally understand, Tom dropped off, but I mean, I'm 54, I just turned 54. And I think I started getting AARP mailings when I turned 50. I mean, that really makes you feel bad. I mean, you're 50.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
Zomers looked at me like, yeah, sure it does.
Well, I can imagine that, yeah.
That was fantastic. What's worse, that the Rolling Stones tour is sponsored by the AARP, or that the iconic band Kiss will live on as a digital avatar? 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Let's go down to one of my favorite callers, Rico in Rock County. Rico, what's worse?
Well, this one's kind of easy to me. I've always kind of thought of Kiss as an avatar. They've always been fake, and it's always been a show in Hollywood, you know, and the Stones just got old.
Right.
What the heck?
Right.
But the way the Stones have transitioned who they were and what they were throughout all the decades, this is hands down, you know, Kiss is the loser. Kiss is the loser.
That's I agree with that. I mean, Kiss is, I mean, they're a great entertainer, great performers, right? All the fire and smoke and all that kind of stuff. But I agree. The Rolling Stones still got it. And who cares if they're sponsored by AARP? God love them. Right. Rico, when you turn a certain age, like I just told Mr. Zomers, when I was about to turn 50, I started getting the AARP mailings. And, you know, it's bad enough turning a half a century, but then, when, you know, when you open up the mail and you got that. Did you get those when you reached a certain age?
Oh, yeah. I've been getting them for a long time now. Yeah, yeah. They keep me reminded. Keep me reminded all the time of just how old I am. You know? Yeah, they're a great organization.
Yeah,
I appreciate what they do. I appreciate the niche that they fill in our society. But, yeah, this is a no-brainer. I'm surprised that they picked up the Stones as their sponsor on this. That's kind of funny. No Coke, right? no Budweiser,
no,
you know, nothing. The AARP, I mean, are the Stones getting that desperate? That's what I'm wondering.
Well, it all comes down to the dollar sign, right, Rico? And hey, if AARP was willing to pony up, and, you know, I mean, people of a certain age, they're going to watch and listen to the Stones and go to those concerts. It's probably a win-win.
Yeah, you know. I just hope that the Stones got really good health insurance, Todd.
I'm sure they do. Rico, always a pleasure. Thanks, Rico, down in Rock County. Have a great day, my friend. If you'd like to give us a call, what's worse, that the Rolling Stones tour is now sponsored by the AARP, or that the classic band Kiss will now live on as a digital avatar? 844-967-2789.
I think it's interesting to say, you know, with AARP sponsoring the Rolling Stones, are they saying, we'll take care of you no matter what your history is, even if you've done all kinds of risky sexual encounters and drugs and alcohol and partying?
Well, you know, I mean, it's timely, timely indeed, as Mike Lucas would say, because now, you know, Obamacare, you know, Affordable Health Care Act is back on as a political topic. Republicans saying they want to either get rid of it or dramatically change it if they're elected in 2024. So I guess it's timely again.
Speaking of that and Tammy Baldwin, she's also a champion for the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
Especially because, I mean, she personally would be affected by that as somebody who had what was labeled a pre-existing condition, yeah, which is a really stupid thing in healthcare.
Yes.
Why, just because they had it before means you can't take care of it?
Yeah. It's, thank goodness for the Affordable Care Act. Thank goodness for President Obama and Joe Biden and all the folks that voted for it. And in particular, thanks to the late, great John McCain, a Republican who helped save it in the United States Senate. Off the text line from WGBW says, my 47-year-old wife has been getting mailings from AARP since she was in her 30s. KISS is just sad and have been for a while.
So, I have to agree with that.
So this caller from up in Green Bay, WGBW, saying that the KISS avatar is worth, wow, getting AARP mailing since you're in your 30s? I mean, boy, if that doesn't,
wild.
If that doesn't make you feel bad, right?
You know, I think that the KISS avatars can kiss off.
Well said. I think the votes are in, and the KISS avatars have lost. And to, was it Tom McFarland? That was a great point. Just live in the moment. Be thankful for, you know, and that's something Norman Lear, who passed away yesterday at 101, was coming out. He's always telling his family and friends, live in the moment. Appreciate the now. We're going to come back and appreciate that now moment with our friend Keegan Kelly from Cracked.com. Don't go away. Back with more after this. This is the Todd Allbull Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allbull Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 34 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock. Glad to have you along on a Thursday, December 7th, 2023. Mr. Zommer's on the board, and we welcome back to the program from Cracked.com, an outstanding writer, reporter, and a student of comedy in general. Keegan Kelly joins us via the StreamYard link. Keegan, glad to have you back on the show. Thanks a lot for coming back on.
Glad to be back. Thanks for having me, Todd.
Yeah, anytime. Love your knowledge. Love that you're a student of comedy in general. You know, I've talked about late night before. And one of the things we wanted to kind of have a conversation about that, and I'd be interested to see if people want to call in actually on this and just offer their opinion as well. But how comedy has changed over the years, and a couple of different ideas. First, that there's this culture war, or it seems to be, in a lot of comedians and comedy, and then kind of this whole manosphere. And let's look at the culture wars first. Kind of explain to people what that means, culture wars and comedy, and how that's changed recently, or at least over the last 10, 20 years.
Of course. So essentially, it's a symptom of this larger cause that I'm not nearly educated enough to completely diagnose myself, but it's part of the increasing polarization, especially in online spaces surrounding political divides. And it's really in the last 10 years, I would say, it's influenced the way comedians interact with each other, interact with the audiences. It influences the kind of content they feel comfortable making, the topics they want to discuss, as they kind of get sucked into these larger political discussions, and those political discussions really invade comedy itself. Usually when this kind of thing comes up, it's talking about some big-name comedian. Mm-hmm. Dave Chappelle is a big one who loves to court this kind of controversy. And it's how the greater reaction to their material and their art is influenced by these political discussions, in his case, more often than not. It's the issue of trans rights, the recognition of trans communities, that sort of thing. And right now what we're seeing is there is a very strong reaction among a large section of primarily male, primarily 40s, 50s comedians who feel that they've kind of been pushed out of this dialogue, of this zeitgeist during the Obama years, and now feel that their identities are kind of under attack by these discussions of what is and isn't acceptable, the responsibility of comedy to influence and kind of reflect these larger social issues and the conversation surrounding them. So there's been a really large push, mainly surrounded by or centered with a couple key players, most notably Joe Rogan, comedian, probably best known for his podcast, but people who've been paying attention for a little longer than that might know him from stuff like Fear Factor, from his early stand-up work, that sort of thing. He's kind of become the figurehead of this wave of male comedians who feel that they're being censored, who feel that they're being policed with the kind of thoughts that they're allowed to put out, with the content that they're allowed to address. And it's created this wave, this feedback loop, where there's now a large community that's turned into an echo chamber of just this kind of comedian and this kind of comedy fan discussing things only through their point of view and kind of seeing the larger zeitgeist as against them. So there's this countercultural element to it all that fuels this loop.
I think you described it so well, and I appreciate that, giving these examples of what they're, the type of comedy and the people they're, I'll use the term, going after. And I guess to put it in kind of perspective, maybe for some of our listeners, I was on the tail end of this, being 54, but, you know, I still remember when Don Rickles was very big, was out doing stand-up and was playing Vegas and on Johnny Carson and later on David Letterman. And you know, his kind of insult comedy was, you know, when you went to see Don Rickles, you knew exactly what you're going for. And if you didn't, you're probably in trouble. But, you know, it was like, is that your wife? Oh my God. It was making, and usually he picked on a guy who had a very beautiful wife. And so he would make these kind of jokes about, oh, this guy's wife is ugly, or this guy's wife is fat, or, you know, the guy isn't going to be able to get it up tonight when he goes back home. You know, I mean, things like that. And then at the end of the show, he would smile and he would say, you know, look, obviously you're all beautiful people. I love you. And everybody was kind of in on the joke a little bit. Not to say that he didn't offend people, you know, he himself was Jewish and told a lot of Jewish jokes. And of course, in today's climate, that isn't going to go real well. But to your point, some of these comedians of today, predominantly white males, in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong, but at least in my opinion, they're just mean-spirited, going after trans people and going after very divisive political things that just incite people that I don't find particularly funny.
Yeah, and that's a large element, is that right now it's a prudent business decision for a lot of these comedians and a lot of these comedians who want to be a part of this manosphere, as we call it, that courting controversy is sometimes the goal over getting laughs. Mm-hmm. And it's a very cynical kind of game that, yeah, it is mean-spirited, because they want to, they see these comedians who they aspire to be kind of touching on these topics, and they see the kind of reactions they get, and they think, okay, people want to smack down at trans people, people want to smack down at immigrants, whoever the group may be, they want to take aim at that and kind of join in on that fun. And it's very mean-spirited, it's very cynical, and it's not funny.
Right.
I'm not saying you can't write good jokes about any group of people or any issue or that there's any topic that's off limits, but at the end of the day, the comedian's job is to get laughs, and that's just not what I'm seeing.
And how timely to be talking about this with the passing of now the late and always great Norman Lear, who we talked about on this show yesterday, passing away at 101. And whether it was his shows like All in the Family with the bigot Archie Bunker, or on Maude, or on The Jeffersons, the writing of Norman Lear was to make Archie Bunker kind of the butt of the joke. And not to say that there weren't words and things said that would not fly for a lot of people today, but the point was to use something that might kind of rile people, but the joke was always on the bigot and or on the person that was the quote-unquote on the wrong side of the issue. These types of things, these manosphere things, as you refer to it as, it seems to punch down and make the smaller, more vulnerable person the joke.
That's exactly right. And to your point, this isn't something new. People have been joking about bigotry for a very long time and from a variety of different angles. And for every Archie Bunker, there was, of course, an Andrew Dice Clay or someone equivalent who would tackle these issues from the other point of view and kind of empower, the guy punching down. And it's the line between those two things has been blurred at this point by a large section of the comedy community who think that Archie Bunker and Andrew Dice Clay are the same thing. It's all just jokes about different people, different marginalized groups, and that it's their right to kind of attack it from any angle that they see fit. So you've lost that level of nuance where the subject of the joke, racism, sexism, bigotry, and the target of the joke, bigots themselves, the delineation between them isn't important. Yep. In this kind of comedy anymore. And that's really disappointing.
And also as a writer yourself and a student of comedy, to me, it seems a bit lazy. Like, let's just take the easiest way to get a laugh and to make a buck rather than to appeal to a broader audience and kind of be smart about what I'm writing.
It's absolutely lazy. And to be fair to both sides here, it's not like this isn't going on in the other direction as well. One thing that people really love to rail about is the state of late night comedy and how since 2016, really, it's been a little one note, a little shallow in terms of just indicating to the audience where their allegiances lie and making the most obvious jokes about the other side. It's not unique to this sphere, but it is something that they've really embraced and kind of taken in as an identity that, it's that they just want to make jokes about these groups. They don't care how they make it. They don't care about writing it in a way that's unique or original. They just want to do the thing that they feel like they're not allowed to do.
Yeah. Your colleague at cracked.com, Matt Solomon, wrote a great piece called John Lovitz Has a Beef with Late Night. Quote, it's all political except for Jimmy Fallon. Talking to this point. When do you think, and by the way, we're talking with Keegan Kelly of crack.com as well. Keegan, when do you think this changed? Because I remember watching Johnny Carson, even early Letterman. It wasn't like at some point during the George W. Bush administration, Letterman just went on a hate rail, basically, against George W. And now you kind of see that with Colbert, with Trump. And look, I'm no Trump fan at all. People who listen to this show know that. But boy, for a while there, kind of pre-pandemic, when Colbert was doing a really, in my opinion, a bad impersonation of Donald Trump, it just got to be unlistenable for me.
Yeah, I think that there is, it kind of hit its peak around the 2016 election, but the seeds of it were planted before that. In my opinion, I think that the late Bush years and the overwhelming anger at the way those, the government was handled in that time and decisions were being made, fueled a lot of these late night hosts. And it gave them that kind of, there was an enemy to push against. And it felt like this was the little guy punching up at the big guy. And then when that flipped over into the Obama years, and we had 8 years of kind of the politics of these late night hosts being the dominant cultural, I guess that was the dominant voice in the conversation. A lot of people who maybe weren't fully to the left, fully agreed with Obama and the Colberts and the Jon Stewarts and all these other hosts who were supporting him felt like this wasn't really the countercultural, this wasn't speaking truth to power. And that kind of fed into this next wave where it swung all the way back in the other direction. But I would say that around 2008 is where you really started to see that paradigm shift, and that anger at the establishment, in many people's eyes, seemed to start to embrace the establishment.
We're going to come back after a short break here and continue talking with Keegan Kelly from Cracked.com. But Keegan, in about 2 minutes here, a minute and a half, set up for us. We're going to come back and talk about it, but set up for the audience. What you mentioned earlier about manosphere, I mentioned it. What are we really talking about here when we say the word manosphere? What is it? And then we'll come back on the other side and discuss it.
Yeah, it's a giant community of very angry comedians on the internet, and they're all in their 30s and 40s, and they all like beer.
That's a great way. And they're all men, I take it.
And they're all men, every single one.
And they're all white predominantly, would you say?
Predominantly,
so yeah. 30 and 40-year-old predominantly white, angry men who feel left out, I guess. I don't know. So let's pick on the poor immigrant, because they don't have enough problems in the world, apparently.
Exactly.
And that just, again, it seems mean-spirited to me. And you would think people could be smarter and better writers than that.
You'd hope.
You'd certainly hope so. We're going to come back and talk to Keegan Kelly from Cracked.com. We'll talk about that, about manosphere, explain a little bit more what it is, give some examples as well. And we're also going to talk a little bit about, do comedians really have to do this? And a great piece that Keegan wrote on Tim Robinson. So we'll talk about all that. If you'd like to call in, ask us a question or a comment on comedy, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Give us a call. Talking Comedy with Keegan Kelly of Cracked.com. Love the alliteration. Back with more after this on the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 10 before the hour of 2 o'clock. At the top of the hour, our friend and colleague Matt Flynn of Matt Flynn Direct will take over these airwaves. Do not miss it, taking us to the front lines of history being made every minute of every day. No one does it better than Matt Flynn. Join him for Matt Flynn Direct immediately after the news and weather at the top of the hour. Right now, no one knows comedy better than our friend Keegan Kelly at Cracked.com. He joins us once again talking about this kind of mean-spirited, I'll call it, comedy. And of course, not everybody's doing that, but it seems to be more and more prevalent. Before the break, Keegan, talking about manosphere, you're defined as kind of 30 to 40-year-old predominantly white, angry, beer-drinking dudes who want to punch down. And tell us, you mentioned Joe Rogan a little bit, but give us another kind of a little context of this manosphere type of comedy.
Sure. It's a kind of comedy that's mainly defined by what it's not. It's not woke. It's not left-leaning. It's not quiet. It's not calm. It's a very angry, frustrated brand of comedy that feels like it's been left out of the conversation in the last 10 years, that it's being silenced, eroded, that masculinity itself is under attack and there are defenders of it. It's this kind of idea that a traditional American man is not an archetype that's celebrated within comedy, within entertainment, and that it is the job of these men to protect it, to endorse it at the expense of everyone else.
And you wrote a great piece here a couple weeks ago, or last week, I guess it was, that people don't have to do this. The piece is entitled, "Tim Robinson is the Last Great Comedian Who Doesn't Have to Participate in the Cultural Wars." Tell us about it.
A little bit of a provocative title.
Yes, a little bit.
He's not the only comedian who doesn't, have to open his sets with who he's voting for. But the idea behind it is, so Tim Robinson, he's a Saturday Night Live alumnus. Mm-hmm. He's a very accomplished comedian. He's had a couple TV shows in the past, but really the reason why he's such a big name in especially online spaces right now is this show, I Think You Should Leave. It is a sketch comedy show on Netflix. It is surreal. It's absurd. It's unlike anything else out there right now. It's a very specific brand of comedy that's become very influential. It's some people have called it cringe comedy. Some people think it's absurd. Some people would put it in the vein of, you know, maybe if you're familiar of with the comedy group Tim and Eric, that kind of alternative comedy. However you describe it, it's really the idea that you can mine this weirdness, this uncomfortable kind of space for hyperbolic comedy sketches, for these insane setups that just go completely off the rails. And it is, like I said, it's very popular. It's very influential in these online spaces. And the thing that's most notable about it in terms of what we're talking about right now is it's completely apolitical. There's no ideology in anything, in any of these sketches. And there, by definition, couldn't be. It's not about these kind of overwrought cultural conversations. It's about making something completely new, completely creative, and turning the mundane into the absurd. And there's not room for what we're talking about with, you know, complaining about identity, complaining about groups, you know, this kind of tribalism that's taken over a lot of online spaces. It's just weirdness. It's just, you know, keeping the audience on their toes, keeping them trying to figure out exactly what's going on. And it's in my opinion, the most promising movement within comedy that's completely outside of this larger cultural conversation.
And it's called I Think You Should Leave on Netflix. Is that correct?
That's right.
All right. I Think You Should Leave on Netflix. Have to check it out. So moving forward, a couple minutes we have left here, Keegan. You know, do you think that sort of comedy that's kind of, you know, I don't want to say going down the middle, but not punching down, do you think that can come back and take over and be prominent again on late night TV or stand up? Or do you think we're just kind of like, we are where we are now, and it's going to be tough to put the genie back in the bottle?
I do think that it can make a comeback. I don't know if late night is ever going to be able to embrace this style of comedy, but I do think that there is a real hunger for this kind of comedy that's not only outside of these cultural influences and not taking part of these conversations, but just by definition couldn't. You know, it would be completely bizarre for an absurdist comic to come on late night and start railing about Trump or go on a podcast and complain that he's being canceled. And I think that a lot of people are very refreshed that there is this entire sphere, this entire way of creating content, art, comedy, whatever you want to call it, that's completely separate, that doesn't share any borders with these conversations. And I do think that we're going to see more of it. We're going to see more of it in the mainstream. We're going to see more stand-ups kind of emulating this style. We're going to see more sketch, of course, because people really do want comedy to be a form of escapism and a form of just entertainment.
We got a late text here from a listener from our station in Eau Claire, the Tap. Said that they saw Brian Rogan. Are you familiar with him? Saw Brian Rogan stand-up comedy last night. He was amazing. Zero swearing, no real political stuff, but I've not laughed that hard in a while. So good. So there, to your point, appears that, you know, there's somebody out there that can still do it.
Is that possibly Brian Regan? Is
that maybe that's it. Brian Regan. Yeah, maybe. Yes. Todd got new glasses and he still can't read. Yes. I should put the phone closer to my face. Yes. Brian Regan. That's exactly it. Are you familiar with his work? I never heard of him before.
Oh, I love Brian Regan. He's really great. He's been around for, I think, since the early 90s. He's a clean comic. He's always been that. He doesn't use four-letter words. He's never dived into politics. He just has a very distinct, playful, but really kind of mature comedic sensibility that is incredibly refreshing. And I'm glad that, you know, whoever texted in had a great time, because he's one of the best working comics and he's very professional.
Really?
He is a master.
That's great. Todd gets it right. Brian Regan. So if you see him, go to him. If you see Keegan Kelly's work on crack.com, also read it as well, because we always love having him here. Keegan, great job. Thanks so much for the insight. Come back anytime.
Thank you so much, Todd.
Our pleasure. Thanks to all of our guests, Dan Schaefer for the recombobulation area and Keegan Kelly. Mr. Aaron Zommer is our terrific producer and engineer. Stay tuned. Matt Flynn Direct is next. Do not go anywhere. Back with more tomorrow. Until then, keep banging your drum.